Well, dear friends, this morning we have heard from the Old Testament and the New. Nothing strange about that. That happens most worship services, at least most worship services that I attend. We tend to we'll get something from the Old Testament and something from the New. A little bit different this morning in that we've had a letter, we've had one of Paul's epistles, and we've had a gospel reading as well. This is either going to be the shortest sermon you've ever heard in your life, or, actually, we're not going to go there, because if you go by tummy time, as my kids still do, your tummies will be rumbling and telling you, Neil, thanks very much for coming along, we've heard enough, it's lunchtime. I was told, I was a parish minister in North East Fife, and it was a very rural parish, and there was three church buildings. One of the church buildings, it was very agricultural. The farmers would come in, and depending on what stage of the farming year we were in, the aromas were quite ripe sometimes, some Sundays, because the farmers would literally come off the field, out of the fields, and into the church. But I was told then that whatever ministers, when they were when a new minister was applying, if you like, they were gauged not by the congregation but by the sheepdogs. They would bring the dogs to the. It wasn't unusual to see dogs in the church, and if the preacher went on a wee bit too long, the dogs would get a bit agitated, and that was either a signal to the preacher to start wrapping things up, or to the congregation to say, "Nah, not for us, thank you very much." So I can't see any dogs in this congregation, but I will trust that you'll tell me to wrap up if I do go on too long. My goodness, what have we heard this morning? We've got the episode with Joseph, one of the greatest stories you could ever hear. We've got the teaching from Jesus, standing, addressing the crowds, and giving absolutely revolutionary instruction as to how to be, how to act as a follower of Jesus. This is the manifesto for Christianity. And then we've got Paul's letter to the church in Corinth. Now that's kind of where I want us, just for a few moments, to not be in Aldershot, nice though it is, not be in St. Andrew's Church, nice though it is, and it is, when I'm sitting in the pew. You know, I've been all over the world, I'm a very fortunate man, I really am. I've been in churches about the size of this space here. I've been in cathedrals the world over. I don't think I've seen better stained glass than that. Am I biased? Yeah, I am. I'm still sticking to it. I love this. I love being here. But for the sake of this moment, I'm inviting you in your minds not to be here. Let us go back. We are the church in Corinth, you and I. And you might say, well, Neil, that's a bit of a stretch of the imagination. I'm not sure what were they like? Well, they were a bit like us, really. This is the first letter that Paul writes to Corinth. Now, for those of you who know your New Testament, you'll know how this all works. Paul had been there, right? He'd physically been there. He'd met them, he'd spoken with them, he'd prayed with them, he'd argued with them. Some of them had fallen out with him, and he had fallen out with some of them. Pretty dynamic relationship going on in Corinth. But the church is established. And as part of their dynamic life, they're starting to notice that, do you know what, life's not bad. But there's one or two things we just want a wee bit clarity on. Why? Well, you know, some people are saying that the followers of you, Paul, some people love you. Other people's not so much. Some are saying they follow Barnabas. Some are saying, well, these guys are good, they're all right, but we follow Jesus. We're in this group. And groups have started to emerge. And we kind of need you to, I don't know. I don't know, Paul. What, are you going to say that's fine? You might. Are you going to say that actually no, we need to do something else? And this whole cross thing, we still can't get our heads around that. You know, this Jesus fella sounds good. We like what he says. We can't really wrap our minds around the whole crucifixion thing. That sounds a bit odd to us. You're asking us to have faith in somebody who was killed by the Romans. Those same Romans, incidentally, who still run the show here. And, well, I don't know. Can you help us with this a wee bit? What happens when we die? Because people in this congregation, you know, they're getting on a bit, and some of them are dying. We know that that's normal. We know that that happens, but we still get sad about it, and we don't want to die. And Paul, can you help us out here, mate? Can you just put pen to paper? And right. So this is where we are. A congregation who have got genuine, legitimate, realistic questions about this thing we call faith. You know, day by day, you're getting up, you're going about your business, whatever that business might be. Maybe you're, I don't know, a school teacher. Maybe you're a doctor. Maybe you're, maybe you sweep up. Maybe you, they were all there. And they've all got these questions. And I wonder, as I'm looking at you and you're looking at me, if you've got these kind of questions. So, it's easy at the start to think, well, Corinth, long ago, far away, different. I kind of put it to us, I'm including me in this congregation. They're not that different. They've got the same kind of questions, the same kind of stresses, the same kind of fears, the same kind of hopes that we all have. Now, we had read for us this morning for chapter 15. So you've already sat through 14 chapters of this letter. The congregation's written to Paul. Paul, help us out with X, Y, Z. Paul's written to them, so the early chapters, he's clarified about factions. He knows that there's factions in the congregation. And he says, look, come on. We know it's human nature. We all gravitate towards the groups that we feel most at home with. We all gravitate to people that we naturally like. That's normal. But actually, that's not healthy, because if that's allowed to play out, then it's not going to be factions anymore. It's going to be division, and life's hard enough without dividing completely. So come on, look at others. So maybe you're feeling a bit sheepish at the minute because you've had the answer that you maybe didn't want to hear. Maybe in your heart you were thinking, I cannot wait for Paul to write back and say that I was right all along. I cannot wait to get Paul's seal of approval, and he's going to say, all you people that are following Barnabas, all you people that are following Peter, all you people that are following Paul, all you people that say that, no, you're too good for all that nonsense, you're going straight to the source, you're following Jesus, we are going to get the tick in the box, and my back's going to be a little bit straighter in that pew, and I'm going to look around and say, I was right. I would like that. If I got a letter, if there was a new letter written, Neil, by the way, you were right all along. Oh, what a day that would be for me. It's not going to happen anytime soon. But can you imagine, right, so we're in this congregation, they're having this read out to them. One or two or all of them must have asked, well, when you were here last time, Paul, you said that Jesus rose from the dead. What does that actually mean? You know, we're alive now. We see life. And we've seen people who have died and they haven't risen from the dead. So can you clarify that for us? And Paul, typical Paul, cannot write anything without it being deeply pastoral and deeply theological. And we get hoovered into this theological treatise on resurrection. Things have to die before they can be born again. And that, to me, when I was thinking this morning, and whenever it was, first started putting some thoughts together, forgiveness has to be the hardest thing that we grapple with, I think. That's why this could be the shortest sermon, or not. The easiest thing in the world for me to say, look, Jesus said, love your enemies. Cool. You all got that? Brilliant. Right. See you. All the best. Have a good week. Wow. Putting that into practice? It was C.S. Lewis, the great C.S. Lewis, that said, everybody is for forgiveness. Everybody comprehends forgiveness. Everybody loves forgiveness. Until they've got something or someone that they have to forgive. Just a couple of real life examples. Again, maybe not the best examples, and maybe not applicable examples, but they're real. As I've said to you many times from this very place, I don't always tell good stories, but I always tell true stories. I was in a field in Estonia back in 2021, the coldest I have ever been. It wasn't -4 or -5 or something, so not actually that cold, but it was wet and I had every bit of warm kit. I looked like the Michelin man. I had every bit of warm kit that the army had issued me, and I was still absolutely freezing. And I got pretty friendly with the company commander, Estonian chap, lovely guy. As I say, we got pretty friendly. He showed me pictures of his kids. I'd showed, you know, typical dad type of thing. I'd showed him pictures of my kids, and we got chatting and all that sort of stuff. You know that I studied music, and it still is a great love. So, in an attempt to kind of make conversation, I've racked my brains for how many Estonian composers can you think of? I can only think of one. I think there is only one. That's famous, at least Avo Part. If those of you on Spotify or any other streaming source, his De Profundis, so Psalm 130 to the Presbyterians amongst you. Our Roman Catholic brothers and sisters call it De Profundis. He set that to music. It's gorgeous. So I chatted to him about Psalm 130, Avo Part. And we had a good chat about it. The loveliest guy, you couldn't have met a nicer fella. When the topic of that country that's next to Estonia, whole demeanour changed. You could see it in his face, his body changed. And I suppose, and it's difficult for me, I suppose, as a Brit. We don't, you know, unless any of you were around in 1066, none of us have living memory of being invaded. Because we're British and we're on an island. But other people do have tangible, real experience of what it means to have an invading force come in. And it was, for me, I'll never forget that, this chap, you know, lovely, lovely human being, changed. Just at the very mention of another country that borders Estonia. So this is real stuff that we're talking about. That there are people in the world who literally have to look at another people, and they might not want to, they might not feel like, but will have to forgive. Can we do that? Jesus' teaching is quite straightforward. It's not, there doesn't seem to me at least to be much grey area. Love your enemies, he says. Wow, that's easy to understand. To me at least, it's pretty hard to live out. But this is what we're given. And Jesus was quite clear. He said, look, it's what, love the people that you already love. Everybody does that. The story in Genesis. And I'm going to end with this. Because when I read it, it was like an absolute, I don't know what phrase you want to use. Did the penny drop? Yes, it did. Did the dagger pierce? Yes, it did. I'm going to, I start with a new Bible every year because I mark it. And I hope you don't mind, but it's a King James Version. It works for me. I know people don't like it, but it works for me. Joseph, like you did with the church in Corinth, put yourself in Joseph's shoes. How many times, I wonder, did he play through in his mind just what he would do if he got his hands on those brothers? Those brothers that sold him like he was a piece of meat into captivity. Those brothers who lied through their teeth about his well-being. Those brothers who gave not so much as a thought to him. And of course, for them, that episode was over in a few hours. For Joseph, his trials were only beginning. Sold into slavery, that's bad enough. Then he went through the false accusations. Then he went through the prison cells. Then he went through the hierarchy, eventually becoming as good as ruler in Egypt. He must have had nights lying in his bed thinking, all this power. If I raise my hand, thousands die. I can put people in jail. Life and death literally is within my grasp if I see them again. And yet, and this, for me, was the part that settled. Joseph is presented, his brothers are presented to him, however you want to envisage it in your own mind, after all these years. And he says to them, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore, be not grieved. And it's the next four words that if I can leave anything with you, I invite you. Be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves. When we talk about forgiveness, and I know I've illustrated it with, you know, the national events that present. Sometimes the hardest person to love is ourselves. I'm not talking about, you know, indulgence or being nice to ourselves. That's an easy bit. But actually, the insight that Joseph has here, it's one thing for him to say to his brothers, do you know what? You're safe. I'm not going to kill you. I could. That would be over in an instant. Not only do I forgive you, I want you in your innermost, in your soul, I want you to know that you are forgiven. Because that's two different things. Me saying that to you, yeah, you're not going to experience the outcome of unforgiveness. But you need to know that forgiveness It's real. It's tangible. It might be difficult to, you know, you can't grasp it immediately. But when you leave this place, that I'm not harbouring in the back of my mind, you know, nobody's going to sneak up on you. And that's the meat of what we're talking about this morning. That's the essence of when we start talking about this thing called forgiveness, especially when we start talking about it in the theological terms that Paul is, when he's talking about we are a forgiven people. What does that mean? Well, it means that we can take this massive, huge concept that whatever it is that we may have done or harbour or think or you know, whatever it is, that we can then, as a re-enlivened people, go forth and communicate that, and to be that, in its essence, it is the most glorious thing. And that's why so much ink has been spilt. That's why in 2,000 years ago, there was a congregation of Greek and Jewish and whoever else, people in a congregation having this read to them and having to take it and live it. And why all these years later, you and I, we're back in Aldershot now, we're back in St. Andrews now, and we are going to go out of here and we are going to be that people that maybe we're just like the woman that touches the hem of Jesus' coat. We can't grasp the whole thing because it's too immense, but we've got just enough, that life is maybe a wee bit lighter. The sun might shine that wee bit brighter because we are that people that God said, I love you, I forgive you, and that forgiveness is real and we take it with us.